Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles. I'm Al Warren, and I've got Mr. Michael Hawley here. How you doing, Mike?
Great. How you doing, Al?
Well, you know, I'm surviving. It's been a rough week already, and what is it, only Tuesday?
Yeah, your cold sounds worse, I'm just saying.
Well, I don't know what's going on. Comes and it goes. You know, something going on. Someone put a spell on me. Speaking of spells, we got the black magic guy here. So he's got a new book called Livewire, and it's not about Motley Crue. Kyle Toucher, thank you for being here.
Sure, you bet. Yeah, I know the other day we were in the car and the song Livewire came on, and, you know, there's that awesome riff in it. And I thought, well, you know, if someone gives me 80 mil for the film, maybe we'll use the song somewhere on the end crawl.
That's good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You gotta look, you know, 10 moves down the road on that kind of thing.
Always.
But thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I've, you know, it's just my first published novel at the ripe age that I am these days. And it's exciting to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, what made you get into writing a novel? Like, why go there now? From all the work you were doing before?
Well, I've always written off and on since I was a kid. I mean, I remember like second, third grade with other kids in school, we were writing stories about the banana man and, you know, the cake people, and they'd come down and have these wars because at the time, this is early 70s, Godzilla movies were constantly on KTLA 5 in Los Angeles. And in those days, they'd rerun the same movie all week. So we'd all see the same Godzilla movie and King Ghidorah and War of the Gargantuas and Gamera, the Invincible, whatever it was. And so we started writing Godzilla stories, and I got really into it. And I'd start rewriting the Godzilla stories because I couldn't understand why an eight-year-old would have access to the generals. You know, Gamera's a friendly monster. You're eight. You're in a baseball cap. I'm in a field tent. What are you doing here? You know, so I'd rewrite them with more cataclysmic events. And but I was always kind of attracted to that. And then as I got older, I wanted to be the guy in the Godzilla suit or the guy building the miniatures. You know, I thought, wow, that'd be neat. And I had no idea how to ever achieve that. Then Black Sabbath happened to me. And once I heard Volume 4 and I heard what electric guitars could sound like that, it was a perfect, it all meshed together. They're all related, you know. If you hear music in those early Japanese films, you can listen to it. I mean, tell me those aren't Sabbath riffs. Those big trombones going, dong, 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 dong. That's
true.
Full Tony Iommi, right? Except he's not tuned down to C sharp. So I was always kind of just attracted to that whole era of that. When I was a kid, I wanted to be the guy in the Godzilla suit. So in middle portion of my life, I ended up in the VFX trade. And when I was a teenager, I discovered all the rock and roll and the Sabbath and the Floyd and the Zeppelin and then the Ramones and the Pistols and all that stuff came out simultaneously. And so I did that. And then the last thing I did, I circled back to writing stories now that I'm 60.
I made it out alive.
Yeah, I'm 60 now.
You're talking to two other 60-year-olds. So that's perfect.
Right. Look at that. All born in Ear of the Tiger.
We're the triad.
That's right. Eye of the Pfizer.
Yeah, the old men. You know, most people listening to won't know any of the bands you named anyway.
No.
I mean, they won't. You can say Ozzy and they might because of Sharon Osbourne.
Yeah, you know, because I love Sharon. You know,
yeah, because of that. And they had that show for a while, right? So he's kind of got a little notoriety. But the most of the other bands, I don't think people really know. I think it's you forget, you know, time goes by and – and it kind of, you know, these old, when you were watching all those Godzillas and stuff too, you're right. A lot of them are really corny. Never thought about detail.
Yeah.
But that was kind of the style, right? In a sense, wasn't it just all about, I don't know, just the suspense, the terror. It wasn't like people were just focused on that really phony guy in the suit.
Right.
And everyone running, and it didn't matter that it was stupid. It was okay. It was still good.
Well, it was the only way to achieve shots like that at the time, too. So, you know, you couldn't get scale any other way unless you went with stop motion and miniatures, well, it was miniatures either way, unless you went stop motion, but you wouldn't have any motion blur. So it was never going to look right. You know, Ray Harryhausen and Willis O'Brien. Yeah, Willis O'Brien did Kong in the 30s. His protege was Ray Harryhausen, who went on to do the Sinbad films and all that that you might remember. So all that stop motion animation, you move the puppet a frame, the frame, the frame. Yeah. And it looks cool. You can really get down into the rabbit hole with some weird looking creatures, but it'll never look, your eye will know that the motion isn't natural, you know? Yeah. And so those are really the only two ways you could do it until CG came along, honestly. Or when Phil Tippett developed Go Motion for Dragon Slayer. So now we're going to go down the VFX rabbit hole if you want to do that. But.
Yeah, that's right.
No, but it's interesting that how that's kind of what people were watching and viewing.
Oh, yeah. That's all there was.
And everyone accepted it. You know what I mean? Like, and now it's, you see it on Svengoolie or Mystery Science Theater, like they show the old movies, right? And they kind of make fun of, you know, add things to it, which is kind of cool. But
right, well, that's like looking at Georges Méliès. He was the guy who actually invented double exposure and visual effects and all this stuff back in the late 1800s into the early 20th century. French guy made it. Yeah, you've heard of a movie from 1902 called A Trip to the Moon, where they shoot a projectile into the eye of the man in the moon. That's Georges Méliès.
Oh.
And you know, someone had to be first, and so, you know, these people laid down this groundwork for everything you see today. So take a look at Frankenstein from 31 or what, or Bride of Frankenstein from 35, all James Whale's early stuff. Look at the German expressionist stuff in there, you know, from Murnau and, oh God, who directed Metropolis? Fritz Lang.
Right.
So but you look at those movies, you could see where everything came from.
But then, you know, they had the substance, but because they had the writing, like Frankenstein, Dracula and stuff like that. The books had the substance. They were incredible. They were really
Dracula is a far better novel than Frankenstein. Yes.
Yeah, but it's still really, it's still pretty incredible. Like, you know, I've been listening to it lately too. I kind of really re-listened to some of these, and the writing is fantastic. And I don't know that it's important today, like in a lot of books.
Oh, I mean, there's still stuff that's very well written. There's TV stuff that's really well written. You know, I mean, look at, it was a few years ago, but God, look at Deadwood. You can't touch that writing.
Right. Yeah, that was good.
You know, look at the writing in the first season of True Detective. You can't come near that.
Right.
You know, so there's still, you know, writers that can put out great books, you know. I mean, let's look at King as an example. I mean, I'm influenced by him. I was reading him when I was young. I read Lovecraft, I read Blatty.
Yeah.
And King and Clive Barker and stuff like that mostly when I was really absorbing, you know, adult horror fiction, you know, after I got out of my Mad Magazine stage.
Right? I'm still
Which is it. Good. I like those.
Oh, God, they were great. The Exorcist Part Fag.
Yeah. Mad and Cracked. I'm still.
Oh, yeah. Is Cracked still around?
No, but it was just there at the time in the 70s, right. You know.
But, you know, I love Don Martin and Argonis and all these guys and, you know, and probably helped shape my acerbic sense of humor, maybe.
Yeah.
But when I was about 13, I read The Exorcist and I wasn't allowed to see the movie, of course, but my parents were avid readers, so everything was in the house. And, I mean, in those days, they were reading Herman Wook and Michener and, you know, and that kind of stuff. And, but I read The Exorcist really young and I didn't know, you know, you could do things like that in a book, you know?
Yeah, that opened up the doors.
Oh, yeah. Oh, bigger than Dallas. And Legion came out a few years later, you know, and by then I'd already seen the film. And, of course, I had, you know, what's his name in mind? Joseph Cotten. But not Joseph Cotten. Who played Kinderman in the film? I can't remember.
Old to remember stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, well, it was George C. Scott because that actor was dead. So George C. Scott played him in Legion, played him in the sequel. And it was just, I love the fact that the dialogue was cool. It was snappy. A lot of it was funny because Blatty was actually a comedy writer. You know, he worked with Blake Edwards a lot in the old days. For those of you in the back of the theater, Blake Edwards.
Yeah, Blake. Yeah. Now, Livewire here, your book. Now, you talk about black magic and things like that. When you're putting together a book like this, do you take already kind of established sort of magic and everything that's going on in other people's work? Or do you create your own?
Mean.
Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Are you taking...
Yeah.
established, like, you know, it's like when people have, you know, a vampire in their book, are they taking the kind of the normal of what people generally think, you know, the cross and mm-hmm. the sun and all that stuff? Or are you going right. on your own when you create this sort of a world?
Well, this thing came out of it from a kind of a, there was an obtuse angle actually to get to the black magic thing. But the idea of black magic meets high tech, what could go wrong? That's the tagline on the back of the book. And when you think about it, you know, did Arthur C. Clarke say that high technology is indistinguishable from magic? So what it is it, this story's kind of complex, but I didn't, you know, you don't see people in a ritual doing ooga booga in robes with swords and, you know, speaking Latin with a teenager tied to a and submarine or whatever it is. I mean, you know, there's none of that. But it is heavily implied that there is a serious occult thing going on simultaneous to a very large high-tech operation at the Very Large Array, which is a real thing, which is an array of radio telescopes in Socorro, New Mexico.
Right.
So under the guise that they're trying to perhaps harvest some type of God particle from a CME, which is a coronal mass ejection, when the sun burps out all this plasma. So the science of the tech and it's a little wacky and everything, but it's the idea is to be in the story so hard that you're not going to sit here and go to some physics book and look things up. Right.
Right.
And so, but it's heavily implied that our people in our book can see something going on in this black tent that's adjacent to the control room where this thing at a radio observatory is going on. A storm suddenly appears out of nowhere, a cyclonic storm, almost like a hurricane or a cyclone in the middle of the desert, which is, of course, physically impossible because those have to form over water, you know, and then we're off to the races. And so basically, to not give away too much, there's something is certainly summoned through this. And when it all gets terribly out of control, they, you know, in a panic, they try to pull the plug on Skynet. Right.
Right. And, right. When in doubt, unplug.
When in doubt, yeah, just unplug and run.
Well, I like the name of Medusa Engineering Corporation. That sounds pretty perfect.
You know, Medusa Engineering is a cover for the Medusa cult. And the so that's also explained in there, too. But I don't want to, again, I don't want to give away too much because I just did. And so. Well,
does everyone die at the end? How's that?
There's some bloodletting. But there's AC-130 Spectre gunships. There's huge auto crashes. But one of the focal points of the action in the book is that this, let's say, entity or force that is summoned through the VLA, when they try to pull a plug, it escapes and the only thing available to it. And that happens to be an electrical substation 4 or 5 miles down the road. So basically, this thing ends up in the power grid. And part of that, as this energy or entity is expanding, the high tension towers along the road uproot themselves and begin to move. So if you've ever been in these, you know, on these highways, you see these 100-foot electrical transmission towers. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So imagine those things on the march. And wackiness ensues.
How about that Ken Lightfeather? Is he going to be shooting that 44 all over the place?
Well, you know, don't show a gun and not pull it.
True.
You know, and so, and Ken Lightfeather is he's a Native American trucker who is friends with Otis Thompson, our proprietor of our gas station, where we find this conglomeration of people who have to pull off the road because the storm summoned by the experiment is so severe that they have to get off the road. And then, of course, they find themselves surrounded by marauding towers. And it's, you know, there's no internet, there's no cell phones, the power's out, you are cut off. On top of compounding that issue is that because this thing is in the electrical grid, it also emits something called the signal. And if you are susceptible to it, because this entity is of a malevolent nature, it gets inside you, roots around like a giant in your sock drawer, harvesting your guilt and your shame. And so you get to relive all that.
Wonderful. What do you want people to get out of the book? Like when you put this together, are you looking at pure entertainment, satire, fun.
Yes. Pure entertainment. I mean, it should just be kind of a fun, you know, I mean, there's some humor in it. It isn't a, you know, a pants down wacky ride, but it, there's, I think there should be moments in it of tension, of scale, large scale action. And there's, sure, there's hopefully some comic moments in there as well. I mean, you know, it's not pratfalls and clown cars, but, although that would be funny, it's just a high entertainment thing. If there's, you know, if you think there's social commentary in it, well, I guess that's up to you. You know, it's, I'm not trying to preach to anybody. I want you to read 80,000 words and have a great time with it. And I want a movie to be playing in your head, you know,
like an AC-130 blasting everything.
Yeah. You know, I think you should see it in a nice 240 with a nice tobacco grad on it for the day scenes. You know, imagine if Tony Scott shot this, you know, and that's the goal, really. It's just to be entertained by it. So when you put it down, you go, that was wild. You know, hopefully while you are reading it, you'll be able to, you know, you'll want to turn the page and find out where we're going. So with Medusa Engineering Corporation, there's also a very bad cat involved in that with him too. And by the name of Armin Jenks. Now, this whole thing, what they're up to here is a thread that permeates all my fiction. This Medusa Engineering, the Medusa cult, sometimes this Jenks guy appears. So there's a bunch of recurring things that weave through it. But Livewire is a great primer to get you into the whole fictional world that comes with it.
Oh, okay.
When you were writing this, were you how did you attack this? Like, how did you start it with characters, or was it the idea and then you placed characters into it?
Yeah.
Is that kind of how it went? Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of what if, you know. It originally started as a short story about 1985 or 6. We were on the road. My band was on the road, and I was a kid. And we're going through the desert. I mean, a kid. I was 24 or whatever. And I was looking at all the high tension towers. I go, God, imagine those things walking around, you know, and just being trapped somewhere and being gripped by that. And so when we got home, I wrote the first time I wrote the story. Wrote it a couple times in the early 90s. I think I cracked it open again and started adding different components. Well, why is it happening? What else could be going on? Is there sinister intent? And so the bones of that second version ended up being the template for expanding it into a novel. When I'd lived longer, for one, you know, I was 35 years older and I'd lived longer. So it was a lot easier to write coherent people. And I had all the time in the world because it was during everybody was in the middle of COVID hysteria, and I had nothing but time.
Yeah, I guess that sort of helps. It's the perfect mood setting too, right?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, you know, I feel like women screaming at you in the grocery store, I guess. But
it's tension, right? It's yeah. About the feeling, the emotion.
There you are.
It's great. You know, prior to sitting down and writing Livewire, I wrote a novel before that. So with all this time that we had off, I just finished 19 months on Top Gun Maverick. I was going to take a couple months off anyway. All this started to go down. I said, I got nothing but time, right? There's helicopter money falling out of the sky. Plus everything was fine anyway. So I just sat out there. Humidor was full and just started going at it. And wrote three drafts at the started sending those to beta readers, got a little feedback, then hired an editor and did the whole thing, you know, properly, because I'd never published a novel before. And I had no idea how to go about doing it. But luckily, Crystal Lake Publishing, who is putting out this book, they're a publisher located in South Africa. They were publishing my short stuff on this Patreon series they have, which a lot of those stories also tie into the entire mythos that's carried through Livewire.
How do you come up with your characters? How do you create them? Like, do you have, it's quite a bit different than writing something like a movie, like script writing.
Well, I guess, you know, I mean, with script writing is, you know, it's, you know, there's kind of an LCD and it's kind of a lowest common denominator, I think, going in some of that, if you've read scripts, you know, and, just that kind of that style, that kind of prose has always kind of been easy for me. And if you've lived long enough, you just know how people talk, how they, you know, what they do in between sentences, facial tics, you know, just, I don't know. You just, it kind of just comes.
Yeah.
I don't sit there and whinge about, well, how would the, unless I'm in the rewrite stage, well, would a 12-year-old say that? You know,
yeah.
Those kind of things. And yeah, sometimes I usually overwrite, of course, in the first drafts. I'll be, you know, there'll be three adjectives in a row. And I go, when I swing back through, I'm going to have to pick one.
And yeah.
That kind of thing. And excising prepositional phrases and cutting out the adverbs and consolidating and all that. That stuff's actually fun, you know.
Well, Kyle, you have a lot of, as you said, a lot of science in there. So you must have done a lot of research as well.
I have the IQ of a dishwasher. And I don't mean a guy who washes dishes in a restaurant. I mean a Frigidaire dishwasher. I just, if it sounds plausible, you know, I'm not Jim Cameron. I'm not going to go, you know, do 18 years of research before I, you know, and plus I don't have the money. I guess I kind of like tech stuff and science, and that's fine. But it's as long as it seems plausible, right? And Tom Clancy said, real life doesn't have to make sense, but fiction does. And, you know, he wrote huge, expansive books about military and all this stuff. I mean, he was researched up the wazoo, you know. So, again, I just want it to sound plausible. Could it happen, you know? I mean, sure, yes, I know where the VLA is, and yes, there's a solar observatory down the road, and there's a town called Magdalena nearby, sure. You know, there was a level of research in that, but I didn't, you know, start calling astronomers. And, you know, why would you use a radio telescope to look at the sun? It doesn't even make sense. But it works in the context of the story.
Yeah.
Perhaps I shouldn't have said that.
Well, no. Well, I mean, you know, you'll hear about it, right? I mean, nowadays it's easy to get.
Oh, there'll be someone on the internet going, you know, clearly, as you know, it's like a Star Trek nerd getting all under the hood. If you,
yeah, because there's been kind of a surge, I know, in the last year, a couple of years, maybe, about, you know, the hard science fiction people, and they're real extreme and pretty serious too. When you interview them, they're so detailed. And,
you know, I've never read any really super hard, like cyberpunk or, you know, hard science fiction and stuff. This thing, like LiveWire, would have my elevator pitch, or just if someone says, what's your book about? You know, I'll tell them, I'll go, imagine Stephen King and Michael Crichton on a lunchtime bender. And this is what they came up with.
Well, yeah. And it won't let you that, the hard science fiction. There's a point where it's too much information too, right?
Yes.
It starts to read like a book, like a science book. Like
And then you asked earlier what the goal. I think the goal is just to be a cool story to read, where extremely crazy, outrageous things happen, and we go through it together to the very end. You know.
Yeah.
And
so, who in your life did you kill off in the book?
Pardon me.
Who do you know in your life that you actually put in the book and had them tortured or killed?
Oh, I'm actually normal. I don't do that.
Oh, come on.
So, yeah, and I'm not working out my rage. I'm not doing any of that. You know, but there's a lot of the thing that is in the book that these people are grappling with, is, which is something that a lot of people do grapple with as they get older, is that these hard feelings that are harvested in them from the signal are about their shattered relationships with their spouses or their wives or their children or whomever, because that's what really matters in life, is your relationships with everybody else, you know, because that's where most, what's the word I'm looking for? That's where more self-doubt occurs, you know, right? It's just because it's based on, it's all relationship-based. So that is the crux of the thing that's torturing these people while they're in the middle of this absolutely impossible situation, you know. And so in the middle of all that, it's like someone nagging you about taking the trash out while there's a gunfight going on in your driveway, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's important. Take the trash out.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, there's live fire on the driveway. Sorry, honey.
Well, watch smell the cat food out when it's done.
Yeah. You know, either that or, you know, yeah, it'd be a shame to have to, you know, bring a scatter gun just to take the trash out in the night. So in those things, it's not, there's not, you know, buried malevolence or anything like that. But, you know, there's a little piece of every author, I think, in every character.
You've got to be in it. You yourself will be part of all the characters in a sense.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, one of the characters is a guitar player who's, band got torpedoed by a bad power ballad, so he and his son are headed off to Austin to start a new life. And of course, the desert has other plans.
Is that Pale Brody?
Pale Brody, yes.
Okay.
Is his name. And so he was in a successful, kind of semi-successful hair band. And they put out a power ballad that just destroyed him. And so that's kind of his backstory. So he's kind of dealing with that. And but at the same time, his marriage went into cardiac arrest. He thinks it's from the fact that he couldn't provide the rock star life and the jet set and all that, and that she was vapid and she left him for it. But of course, we find perhaps that is not the case, and which is directly related to his son. So there's a lot under the hood with all the characters in the midst of all this absolute huge scale chaos that's going on around them. So it's the macro and the micro together like that, you know, so with kind of a little sci-fi boost behind it. So
what's your plan with this? Do you want to go into a whole series of books?
I don't know if enough people live through the book for that, but
it's always easy to bring it back, you know.
That's right.
Or nowadays, write the prequel, you know. It's some.
Oh yeah. You know. Well, actually, there have been a couple of prequel stories on for Crystal Lake's Patreon thing. I wrote like setup stories of getting people to where they are in the story, but the whole thread of Medusa Engineering and what their ultimate goal is in the world is explored in a lot of other things that I have, a couple of which are published, some of which are not. And because I've only been at this for a couple of years, taking it as seriously as I am now. So there's a million and a half words of stuff crammed onto this hard drive. So I'd love to see this take off. I mean, you know, is it going to be the next, Avatar? Probably not, but it'd be nice to have some visibility, have people get behind it, you know. And since I've been a visual effects artist for a long time, you know, I was on the Battlestar Galactica team for 10 years. I was all part of Firefly and Serenity, Star Trek Voyager. Like I said, I did 19 months on Maverick, part of the previs team. We set up the flight sequences in CG before they flew them. And we did the post-viz, and we did the first whack of all the visual effects shots to make sure they looked good enough for screenings, you know. So I've been around action sequences. I've been around things that fly and things blowing up and all that for a long time. And I think that kind of helped with the pacing and the intensity of the action sequences in the book, too.
Yeah, I would imagine that's got a big influence in how you write it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm shooting it while I'm writing it, too. You know, I can see it. You know, but it's not written like a movie script at all.
All right, so you're not doing a screenplay as well, or are you going to?
Oh, look, if somebody optioned it and asked me to do it, you bet I'd do it. Absolutely. You know, I'd post up in some room somewhere, and you know, I'd love to do it. You know, but I can't invest the months in that right now while I have other things going.
Yeah. What do you like better, short stories or doing the full book? Which
you know, it's Livewire started originally as like a 25-page story. And as this version of it kept growing, once I got past about 40,000 words, I thought, I guess we're going to be a novel, you know. And I didn't really know how long it was going to be because I was going into so much more detail with characters and, you know, expanding some of the incidents, of course, too. And short stuff's fine, but I find that I'm better with things that are longer. You know, it's as you can tell by this rambling conversation, it's harder for me to be concise.
Yeah, well, I mean, the short stories, you have to get the main points of the characters across in fewer words.
Oh yeah, like they. You know, a friend of mine described it as a novel is a train trip. You know, where you're sitting in the car and looking at the countryside and letting it all unfold. You know, short stories being in the express train. You know, trying to get from 33rd Street to 58th. You know, just nothing but trip, nothing but story. And that's a cool discipline, and it is fun to do, and I do like doing it. You know, and because you can pack a lot into it if you do it correctly, and there are people who are masterful at it. You know. Maybe we'll get there one day.
Did your beta readers really help you out?
You know, they do. In fact, a couple of them are writers, so I got the kind of the forensic input too, which was great. You know, and other people I've known 30 years. Oh, that was great. That was cool, and all that's nice. You know, but they would ask, well, how come this character? You know, I don't get what happened here. I need to hear that.
You know? Right.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he should be doing A, B, or C instead. You know, so I'll take that to heart when I rewrite it. And then, of course, once it gets to an editor, and you start getting really forensic with it, to the point of a line edit and notes in the margins and the whole thing. And
yeah.
Right. Yeah, hire somebody experienced.
I remember the editor told me when I was writing one of my fiction novels that I head hop too much. As in, I'm going to the point of view of too many people, and it kind of gets the reader exhausted. So I just had to reduce those numbers. So,
yeah, some of that in this book. I know that, and there's one particular scene in it where everybody's being affected by this signal at the same time. You know, and I go, I can't jump into head. I can't jump in from head to head. I have to put them in little subsections. You know, because right. Even I got confused. You know. And yeah. I wrote the bloody thing. And but that's why you go through four drafts and a polish or whatever it takes, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What makes a good book to you? Like when you, what is a good book to you?
To me, a good book is when I'm reading it and I find myself nodding off and I go, oh God, I got to get through this page. You know, or you're reading, oh my God, I just blew through 45 pages and I didn't even realize it. You know, that's when you know it's smooth and it's effortless. You know, that's a good writer and a good editor, you know, and just working together. It's really good. It's great storytelling. You know, yeah. A good movie's the same way, right? You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of people bashed on like Return of the King or whatever for being 3.5 hours. But I actually thought the extended version was better, you know. It didn't feel that long, but I just thought it was great storytelling, you know. And
it's kind of like reading the book because the book is so long, but that's why I like the book because it got into so much cool detail that the movies couldn't do.
Yeah. And, you know, there's stuff in the Tolkien stuff I just couldn't get through. I'm just not wired for it, you know. And I just couldn't get through it. I could never get through Dune either, you know. But
I like Dune 1, but the rest of them I didn't like, just the first one.
Did you read the Hyperion stuff? Did you read Dan Simmons' Hyperion books?
No.
Man. Oh, first one was so good. Ooh. And there's Hyperion, Fall of Hyperion, Endymion, and I think The Rise of Endymion.
And, so I'm gonna read Livewire first and then go to the Hyperion?
Okay, you're more welcome to read Livewire first. Yeah. And you can do, in fact, you could do readings and interpretive dance simultaneously.
Well, there you go. Go
yeah,
on.
You can do, I'm an AC-130 Spectre gunship. You know? Hear me roar. I'm I'm empowered. What makes a good book to me is I love the fact if I find out things I didn't know, because if it's a real research author, that's great. I just like a really well done story where I get lost in it and I lose track of time. That's when I know it's really good. You know?
Yeah.
And anything's like that. Anything that is superior is like that. You ever been to dinner with someone and you're running your mouth for 3.5 hours and you have a $280 bar tab?
They did it. That worked.
Yeah. That means, wow, I guess we were onto something, right?
So where do you see yourself going now? Like, what's going to happen? I mean, you don't know how it'll go, but what are you doing now? Are you working on something else?
I am. Right now I'm doing before Livewire comes out, I did a novella called Life Returns. Now, the band I was in called Dr. No was a kind of a punk rock metal hybrid thing. And we had a tune called Life Returns that had kind of a supernatural theme in it, you know, revenge from the grave, Aunt Mary, you know, Uncle John comes back from the dead and, you know, because Aunt Mary killed him. It's kind of the gist of the song. I go, well, what if we take that story as a way to bridge the gap between fans of what I did in my 20s and to what I'm doing at 60? So why don't I take this story they're familiar with and wedge it into the same universe I just told you about in which Livewire takes place. And which takes place in Walpurgis County, which is a very haunted place I've written about extensively. And there's twists and turns and maybe not exactly the way you think it's presented in the tune. Plus, there's lines from the song, of course, in the prose throughout the thing. And it turned out being like a 75-page novella at the end of it. That went to beta readers and everything, too. And the idea is that a couple weeks before Live Wire comes out is going to be a freebie ebook or PDF download from kyledoucher.com. And hopefully it'll serve as kind of a little like an intro, like a little, you know, like an appetizer before we go to the main event. So the idea is that I'd like to pull fans of the band with me along on this venture in this stage of my life. So why am I writing now? You asked earlier, because I can do this till I'm 85.
Well, there right? you go.
You know, or 90 or however long I got, you know, right. And everybody gets talents, you know, everyone's issued, you know, as you're waiting to be born, you're standing in line and they hand you out the little scroll that God wrote out for you. Here's your talents. You're a mathematician. You're great at making shoes. You know, you're going to be the best, you know.
Beer drinker.
Yeah, beer drinker.
That's me. That's me.
Or geophysicist. My, me? Make up crazy.
How dare you?
That's what I ended up with. And I've been very, very lucky, very blessed to be able to do that and find ways to make a living at it. You know, I've dug ditches and I've mopped urine. I've done all that stuff, you know, but I've been very fortunate in the back half of my life. Especially
and that's just what you do at home.
Yeah, yeah, and that's just hanging out. And that's just hanging out at the 7-Eleven. And drop your Slurpee. I want to mop it up.
Yeah.
And so I've been very fortunate in the back half of my life to be able to do that and to be able to use that. And it all kind of converges now. So the music career, the VFX thing, what I'm writing now, all of it is kind of in this, you know, this, what is it? The guy in Blazing Saddles, you know.
Yeah.
Cascading down into a pool of creative alternatives. And it's just a, I feel very fortunate to be able to do that. So the Life Returns ebook named after the song of the same name is a full on horror story. And, no weird science or anything like that, but it's, you know, there's occult stuff in it and all that and coming back from the dead and homicide and, you know, the spooky house and, you know, the whole bit. And, that'll be available, I'm hoping within the next week or so. Because I think the ebook 49.
Oh, okay.
And so that'll bridge the gap. Then you'd be ready to go into Livewire after that. So hopefully the fans of the band would like that. And because I think it worked out really well. And you don't have to be a Dr. No fan to dig the story either. So
Livewire is ready April 14th, is it?
April 14th. The pre-order link is already at World Famous Amazon. .com where the world stops for books. And
boy, you've got that one down.
And tampons. And honey, can you give me that new Kyle Toucher book? Oh yeah. Well wait, you know what? I need some OB tampon.
Yeah.
And the so that'll be available there and Life Returns will be a freebie. And because remember the first hit's free, right? But you gotta pay for the, you know. The dime bag's free, but you got to pay for the ants.
Yeah.
And that's the idea behind that. So that's April 14th. I don't know what day of the week that is. And I'm really excited about it because I'm as excited about Livewire coming out or having even, you know, telling Chris Awakes asking me to publish the book as I was when we were kids and a record label was interested in our, you know, our garage band, essentially. You know, yeah. It's the same thing. You know, I'm just older, so I don't freak out as much.
Yeah. Well, because it's just timing. You, how have you adapted to the this whole modern, you know, internet and social media and all that stuff? Are you widely available? Are you all over the place, or are you kind of hidden?
Well, you know, I mean, I have a, you know, the website's about to go live, and I'm on Twitter under my name, Kyle Toucher, on Twitter. So if anybody's interested in me promoting myself, that's the place to go. And I promote a lot of the other people there that are doing the shallow waters competitions on Crystal Lake, which is everybody who does 1,500 word stories every month on a theme. And there have been some really good writers in there. So we all contribute on that. And that's really fun. Facebook, who really cares? And
well, there are baby boomers on Facebook.
I guess so. I'm technically one of them. I probably should be more visible there, I suppose. And things are, you know, I still have a job that takes 10, 11 hours of my day. Yeah. You know? Oh, so, well, you know, man. A lot of, you know, I'm not just not sitting there living the life of Riley because I have a novel out. You know, it's still, you know, I'm still on the blocks doing shots of jets and tanks and all that kind of stuff, you know, during the day. So it's, you know, you have to schedule your time, not schedule, but you got to squeeze the time in when you can to write.
Right.
So I get up before dawn, sometimes right in the morning, you know, or stay up late. It depends, you know.
Yeah. Before you mop the urine.
Before I mop urine and, you know, yes. And dig ditches, you know. So I can have a taste of my 20s.
Do you have to be in a certain mood when you write, or can you just turn on? You can just like
sometimes okay. it's hard to turn on. You know, when you're distracted by other things. You know, if your head's in something else. You know, if you have a complex shot that I've been doing all day or chasing deadlines and stuff, sometimes I get too frazzled. But if I can eke up here at, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock at night and maybe punch out even 90 minutes or 2 hours, even if it's just editing, you know, sometimes after you relax and you can get into it, you know, time just like that, like we were saying about a good book. If you're in your own writing and time really goes by, then you know you're in the zone.
Right.
You know, I think that's a great indicator of almost anything. If you lose track of time in something, you're in the zone one way or another. You know,
yeah, right.
I don't care if you're on a sailboat or, you know, driving down Mulholland at a nice set of wheels or whatever it is. You know, there's probably cooks who get like that, you know. And so it can't happen. It's just finding the time and not using it as an excuse that you can't find the time. Right.
Right.
Yeah. It was great during all that COVID nonsense because I could just hours a day. Sometimes I do 2 sessions a day. You know, it's going through a lot of cigars, but it was awesome, you know, and it really helped get the engine restarted.
Right. You know?
So yeah, instead of sitting down after not writing anything for 15 years and go, well, I'll do a couple of short stories. I wrote a 105,000 word novel.
Well, that's good. It worked. Yeah. It worked.
And then I wrote Livewire after that.
Yeah.
And so that novel's been to an editor, and we're, you know, that's in revision. So hopefully,
Livewire is about 80,000.
And Livewire, I think, you know, I have the manuscript up, is 82.8. Yeah. Okay. So I think I'm not exactly sure how that's going to translate to, you know, number of pages or whatever, but it's, you know, I think it's just in the pocket for.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, maybe about the length of Misery, maybe something like that.
Yeah, that's a good. It's a good size. I think it's a good.
Yeah, and first thing out of the gate, I'm not going to slam anybody with. Here's 1,000 books of me rambling.
Yeah.
You know, you can listen to this if you want to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets to be too much.
Yeah, so you keep it short and sweet. Keep it action packed. Keep it fun. You know, and then when the horror does happen, it's whoa. You know, and you just go on a nice hairy ride together. You know. It's like going on a, you know, oh, it's a roller coaster, but I mean, it's just like going on a really hairy ride together, and then you get out of it and you realize you had a great time. That's the goal.
But it sounds like you also said that there's relationships involved, so there, anyone that's into that, they're going to get hooked with some of these characters that you have.
Yeah, you know, because there's just, you know, one of the characters is guilt-ridden because his son could have been a baseball star. He talked him into joining the Marines. He ended up getting killed in the Beirut bombing back in 1983. Oof. His wife never let him hear the end of that. So, you know.
Of course.
Yeah. So there's that father's knows best moment, you know. And so that's one example of just the severity of the relationship examination that's going on and with some of the characters there. But right. Of course, now because it's also brought forth by the signal, you know, there's also manifestations of it. You know, in the real world, gets a little hairy when you start seeing your wife in her coffin while you're in a shed trying to start a generator
to mop the urine.
Well, probably yes. Standing next to the Slurpee machine.
Yeah. Well,
you know, the rough nights in a mini Mart in New Mexico in 1993.
Well, you never know. Well, Kyle, right. It's certainly been interesting. So now the book will be out the 14th, you said, and of course.
Livewire will be out April 14th, and I hope to have Life Returns. It's a little hard teaser predecessor out, hopefully by the 1st of April. That's the goal.
Fantastic.
And possibly even earlier. And that will be available at kyletoucher.com or kyletoucher.monster. which redirects. And world famous Twitter, it's just my name, KYLETOUCHER. But LiveWire, I thank you guys for giving me the time to babble about it. And
I hope
it turns out to be a fun sci-fi horror romp that it's intended to be.
I'm sure it is. Yeah.
And, you know, keep your eye out for the ice skating dance number in the middle of the book, because it's a nice little break from the tension.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Well, the beauty of writing horror is that the fact that there's really no restrictions, that you can just, you know, it's an open field as long as it's plausible.
Right.
You know, no matter how crazy it gets, as long as it's plausible.
Well, everyone, look for LiveWire. Of course, we'll have that up on the website as well, so people can find it with one click. So, Mr. Kyle Voucher.
That's right.
Well, I appreciate it, Kyle. Thanks for being here.
Nice speaking with you, Kyle.
Yeah, great. Thanks, fellas. I really appreciate it, and thanks for taking the time.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.